Welcome to Indie Game Business, where you'll learn to navigate the industry with ease. This show is produced by the Powell Group, the leading business consulting firm in the gaming industry. Visit us online at indiegame.business to learn about our online digital events. We have some amazing sessions with people in the gaming industry, and you can participate for free and purchase inexpensive passes to our industry-leading business-to-business system. Now, here we go, Indie Game Business. What's up, everybody? My name's Indy, and that gentleman next to me is Mr. Jay Powell from Powell Group Consulting, and welcome to another amazing episode of Indie Game Business. Today, we've got Casey from Ashes and Diamonds Entertainment, and the topic, the future of indie games, brand, IP, digital storefronts, Steam alternatives, so much. This is going to be a really great show, so stick around, ask your questions, and I will see you towards the end.
So, Casey, welcome to the show.
Hey.
And I'm going to get you started on a question, and then I'm going to read this article that just popped up on my feed and feeds in directly to exactly what you and I were talking about 5 minutes ago, and then we'll approach that later. And I love the fact that I haven't even kicked off yet, and we're already derailed on the show.
So That's great.
Tell us how you originally got into the industry, and then walk us through your career up to this point.
Yes, I've been in the industry over a decade. Started my career at EA, was extremely fortunate and lucky. I joined the free-to-play division. There was a publishing division called the EA Free-to-Play Publishing Division. And I think at the time, EA was a bit ahead of everybody else in terms of free-to-play, but there were some small mishaps that didn't let them succeed during that era. So we're talking about 2010, around that time. You got your Battlefield Heroes, Battlefield Play for Free, Need for Speed World, FIFA World, Lord of Ultima, Command & Conquer, Tiberium Alliances, which is also, weirdly enough, a game that still exists to this day. It's a web browser game. Maybe the only the only Command & Conquer game that is still alive, I think, to this day, and played by a lot of people. So I started my career in free-to-play, did a lot of, you know, community management, marketing, brand management, move over to AAA, worked on the big Battlefield games, launched several of them, and then did a lot of, you know, publishing, product management. And then my last role was at Arrowhead. I was the live service director for Helldivers 2, launching next year in February. And then I decided to kind of leave in March this year. And I picked up my consulting business, ashesanddiamonds.com. And I also started a consulting network, Mighty.Diamonds, which is like a network. I usually describe it as the Avengers of the video games. And I feel like your team and your kind of like company is extremely, I would say it's a inspiration to what I'm doing with my network, because it's like I'm collecting top tier consultants plus 10 years experience across the board, and we're helping people with production, marketing, and business of video games.
Nice. So yeah, we'll talk about more of the other stuff like later. But here's all right, so here's what you and I were talking about right before we went live, and I had to be like, all right, hold on, we'll talk about this later. It's about Steam's dominance and how a lot of individual publishers have tried to crack in on it, and they haven't. And I think we're in agreement in the fact that they're not going to unless they start selling more than just their own stuff. And then how Amazon's been trying to do it for 15 or 20 years, but apparently they just fundamentally don't understand how video games work because they haven't been able to do it despite having all the tools to be necessary. And then I see this article that literally just came up an hour ago in my feed, and I don't know if this is something that I missed in the Activision Blizzard merger talks or whatever, but I knew that one of the ways they got past the UK regulators was because they said, we're going to let Ubisoft have access to some of this stuff. What I didn't know or I didn't catch is that Ubisoft has the exclusive cloud streaming rights for Call of Duty and the Activision Blizzard titles. Did you know it was an exclusive?
Yes, I knew.
Okay, maybe I missed something then.
I'll be honest with you. I haven't read up on it too much, but and I'm assuming there is a time constraint on that, right? Because
But it's 15 years.
Will cloud? Remember when Xbox One launched and there was all that talk about cloud and how cloud is going to change everything? And like we always, the industry is so smart, but it sometimes it's so stupid. and like, you know, I hate buzzwords. Who the hell is talking about NFTs today? Nobody. Right. And we still have some companies and we'll see the fallout from that. A lot of companies who got money the past 2 years and who are, you know, based on NFT or Web3. I don't even know what that is. And those probably just disappear. But if we go back to cloud, cloud was supposed to be a huge thing. And Sony bought, what's that company called? The one that Sony bought? They bought them like 15 years ago, I think. In any case, they also have their cloud service, right? And is the infrastructure up to the point where, like, you can play your Call of Duty? Like, Call of Duty will demand a lot of, like, you know, it demands a lot of precision. You want to be, you know, you players who play that type of game, they want to have the best experience. And you won't get that playing on cloud, right now at least. Maybe 10, 15, 20 years in the future, absolutely. So that entire cloud thing is just... It's like I read it as a joke.
It's handy for a lot of indie games because I mean I've got the Xbox, the whatever their super duper Game Pass Plus blah blah, and I'll sit there and I'll play, you know, I've got it routed into my Steam Deck and I'll sit there and play it on the couch. But you're right. There's no way you can do a Call of Duty or something like that. But no, I just, for whatever reason, in all of that, I miss the fact that they gave the exclusive rights to them, because that's...
And that's 15 years, right?
Yeah, for the next 15 years. Yeah.
Well, you know who's also doing cloud? Netflix.
Yes. And God bless them. But can somebody explain to me why I am going to use Netflix to get a game that
I'll tell you why.
Get on the regular store?
I'll tell you why. So there's a game called, I think it's called Balloon Monkeys or something like that. It's a pretty big game on Apple, on the Apple device at least, or the App Store. And then I went and wanted to download it for my kids. And I think it's a $10 game. But then I saw that there was another app, same game, same name, everything is the same, but it had a Netflix logo on it. I downloaded that one, and I didn't even know I had access to that type of stuff. And I logged in, and I could play it for free. So that was very interesting. Also, I'm very surprised Apple actually allows that at all. But obviously, you're not going through an Apple payment system, so that's fine from that perspective. But it's interesting because now, instead of me going and saying, okay, the only option I have is to buy the Balloon Monkey app thing game, I went and got it for free through Netflix. And Apple potentially lost money on that.
Okay, so then they're taking the Amazon Prime Games methodology there. You pay for a Netflix subscription, you get free access to games that would normally cost you money. How does that work with free-to-play games? Do you still have to pay for microtransactions, or are all of those free? Or are they not doing free-to-play games? I honestly haven't looked at it because I've just... Every time I've seen it, I'm like, I don't understand the point. But if the point is now you get free games that you would normally have to pay for, okay, I get that part.
You know what's interesting? I don't think they're going to put free-to-play games as of right now, because I feel like what's beautiful about Netflix so far at least, and they have tried to change the app from time to time, and they do their updates, right? But the beauty about that type of platform is the simplicity of... I'm already a customer. I don't have to do anything. So the barrier to entry is extremely low of me just clicking on the thing that I want, right? As soon as I add additional layers to that, you know, that will just turn some people off. So I think Netflix, at least for the time being, will continue. And they might, you know, we don't know, in the future, they might go their own route and like, you know, start a new Steam, let's say. But for now, I think they're just focused on having high quality games that are engaging, that, you know, that doesn't require much of the user. And similar to the content that they have on their, like, you know, on their shows and series, it should feel the same. And that's what I'm seeing, at least.
I'm just not sure. It up and I will tell you, they have a ton of games. I'll give them that much.
But they don't have all the games through a single app.
Well, I just put it up on my Netflix app.
Oh, okay. But if you click on one of them, what happens if you click on a game?
Oh, you're asking me hard questions now.
Okay, and now I'm trying to find my own phone.
Excuse us while we completely deviate from whatever the hell we were supposed to be talking about. And
so let's see.
Find something completely separate.
So what happens if you click on your profile first when you open the app?
Okay, all right. So this is right here. This is the problem. Go to the Play Store.
Play Store. New and hot. Okay.
So that's the other thing that I never understood. It's like they're basically providing a front end that you still have to go to the Play Store to get.
Because I assume their technology is not at the point where you can maybe have interactive. I'm assuming, but it shouldn't be hard for them to solve. I mean,
that's it. Yes, this is.
It shouldn't be.
They literally pioneered streaming television, so you would think that they have servers.
It's probably coming. I wouldn't be surprised. But that balloon game. I mean, it's a bit. I would say it has some complexity to it. I mean, it's a tower defense game. And you're doing a lot of selections and there's a lot of calculations happening. I'm not sure if that's like a problem for them to solve right now. I haven't looked at the rest of the catalog. But I think for me, what's interesting again is like, it's another app that still exists. Like they both exist side by side on the App Store. And one says, I don't know, 999 or whatever. And the other one has the Netflix logo. And you can just download the one with the Netflix logo and play it immediately for free. You just log in with your normal Netflix account. That I feel is super interesting, and I'm not sure if that's going to do anything in relationship to the Apple and Epic lawsuit. And, you know, I mean, speaking of that, we also talked before the call about Steam and that 30% cut as well. And I feel like have you seen the news on Epic and their store?
What about the exclusive stuff?
If you publish your game on Epic and have it exclusive for 6 months, you don't have to pay anything to them.
Yeah. I think it's brilliant.
It's amazing. It's amazing. And I think every indie developer who's like, you know, listening should be paying attention to that and maybe even factoring it into their P&L or their financials. And maybe even see it as an opportunity to maybe also test your game for a short while before you move.
Well, you got to be careful about that part because you don't want to burn, you know, buddy relationships on the Epic Store. But we have absolutely hit a point where there's so much stuff on Steam that, I mean, the new and noteworthy tab isn't nearly as powerful as it used to be. So from one standpoint, why does it matter if you launch 6 months later on Steam if you get to have all of your, you know, stuff going through Epic first? I mean, you just, instead of pointing users at a wish list on Steam, you just point them at your Epic page. It seems like a no-brainer to me, but, you know, we'll see if it picks up though.
I think what's good is there are options. People are not locked into, you know, it is a monopoly, unfortunately, to a certain degree, right? But I feel like any competition, and I'm assuming, I hope that everybody else agrees, any competition is good because that will just make it better for everybody. And we talked about the 30% price cut. I completely think that's just like, you know, that's bullshit. And people should talk more about it. It's interesting how everybody went up in arms and, you know, the entire gaming community rallied behind developers in relationship to Unity. But I feel like people should do the same when it comes to and, you know, now what's good about Steam is, like, you know, they've been doing some really good work for the consumer. From a consumer perspective, Steam is really, really good. And from a consumer perspective, you know, you're having this platform that is constantly listening and changing things, and it's providing a lot of sales. That's another thing, by the way, which also hurts us in another way, unfortunately. But it's keeping those people, the people who are the core, it's keeping them happy. If this was a public company, I think it would have gone a different route. and this is okay. So listen to this term, and I think this is why Steam is still dominating, because this term that I'm going to give you right now, I'm not sure if you've heard it before. Have you heard the term enshittification?
Oh yeah. I am very familiar with it.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I actually quoted that in an email to our own staff about a month or two ago. Yes, the enshittification of platforms.
Yes. I've been thinking about this thing for a couple of years, but I've never been able to put my finger on it. And I think for me, on a personal level, how I've kind of, like, you know, noticed it mostly is using YouTube, using Twitter, using Facebook, these platforms. Obviously, as a community manager back in the day, using Facebook mainly. Facebook was our main tool to communicate with communities back in the day when we were free to play. And now, it's impossible. Like, there's no point. If you're not throwing money at it, there's absolutely no point to be on Facebook. So I think this enshittification term, and I'll give some context to the people who are listening, it's coined by a guy called Cory Doctorow. He's a journalist, and he wrote an article at Wired. So if you just search enshittification Cory Doctorow, you'll probably find it. And how he describes it is that, you know, first, platforms, they're good to their users, right? Then they abuse their users to make things better for their business customers. And then finally, they abuse those business customers to claw back all the value to themselves. And if we look at Google, if we look at, you know, Apple now, obviously, as well, we're looking at Facebook and all these platforms. They're all going through the same journey, and it's a bit unfortunate that they're not realizing that or not understanding that. I saw a video a couple of days ago about, have you tried, well, are you using Google today to search?
Yeah.
I actually stopped doing it yesterday. I shifted completely to DuckDuckGo, not because I prefer one platform or the other, but because I'm not getting the type of results that I used to get a couple of years ago. And I've just been too lazy to do anything about it. But I said enough is enough. If you just search for something on Google right now, like, the first page is just stuff that is curated and paid for. And usually when I'm looking for something, I'm looking for answers from humans. I'm not looking for answers from companies. You know what I mean? If you search for anything right now, all the answers you're going to get are, like, you know, curated company-based answers. I miss the days when you search for something and you find answers from humans on a forum. And then you have to scroll a bit and people are, like, you know, discussing the subject or whatever. But at least you're getting nuance. You're getting you're getting faster responses, because we're all human. We all think the same and we have the same problems. And people have these problems and they type in the problems. But now all I'm getting are companies who have an FAQ or some type of, like, you know, curated page to answer these questions, and it's not really hitting on what I'm looking for. So that's kind of, like, you know, for me, I switched to DuckDuckGo. Now I'm trying it out. We'll see if it is better or not. So far, a bit better in terms of, like, you know, the types of results that I get when I search. But I feel like, you know, going back to the enshittification thing, luckily, that's what's good about Steam, that they're a privately owned company. They're not, you know, they're making a lot of money, but they're not, they're not beholden to these quarterly reports or these like in stock markets. They don't have to do things that go against their players, which is what a lot of, unfortunately, specifically stock listed companies do.
No, that's typically when we see things starting to go, downfall. So, and there was an article, because I've pretty much gotten professionally and personally off X in the last, 2 weeks, not only because of all of the, shitification that's going on over there, but also because we had a fraud claim that I have absolutely no idea if we're going to get money back from or not. And I'm just finally and I ask Pebs, our community manager, I'm like, what is the downside to us just saying fuck it to Twitter? And she's like, not a lot. And then there was an article that just came out yesterday, if I can find that one, where Neiman Reports said, they pulled off Twitter and they said the effects of leaving Twitter have been negligible. A memo circulated to NPR staff says traffic has dropped by only a single percentage point as a result of leaving Twitter.
Yep. That's interesting. Remember the days when Elon was about to take over Twitter and everybody was like, oh, I'm going to this other platform. And then 2 weeks later, everybody's back and normal and pretending that nothing happened. It's interesting. The problem with these platforms as well, what I'm feeling is they create bubbles.
Yeah.
The internet was free once upon a time. I'm not sure how old people are who are listening to this, but back in the day, in my old day, I was always in a position of discovering something new. The internet was this thing. It's like the universe. There's these planets where you'll find life forms or whatever. That was the internet back in the day. And now it feels like, oh, I'm stuck here and you're only serving me kind of what I click on. You know what I mean? And it's such a sad situation we're in.
Part of the problem with those bubbles too is the fact that, for indie teams, when it's, we constantly get the questions where should I be promoting my stuff? And for years, for better or worse, it's been Twitter. That's where everybody got the most engagement. And now, you've got people leaving Twitter, you've got Blue Sky and Threads, and TikTok has grown in terms of a big place for visibility for indie devs. But now it's you've got to find your audience all over again on three or four different platforms. And which one is going to pan out in the end? Which one do I invest in? And it's a lot harder question, to get answers to now.
Mm-hmm. Back in the day when I was a community manager, in the beginning, forums, you had to have your own dedicated forums. That was the place. And then obviously forums are very, what do you want to call it? Archaic? Is that a correct word for it?
But they're not. They're coming back under a different name.
Are they? I hope so.
Look, what is Reddit? Reddit is a giant forum database. And even Discord now has forums in your Discords.
I don't feel like Reddit creates the same type of community in terms of the people. Do you know what I mean? I've seen this name before. I can trust this person. Or maybe it does because I'm just too old. But I guess what I'm trying to get to is forums back in the day, and I hope they make a comeback. And then we moved over to social media in the form of, you own you actually do own your channel, and people who actually follow you actually see the content you post, unlike how it is today, right? So Facebook and all these other platforms. And today I feel like if I would ever become a community manager, the first thing I would do today is create a Discord channel or a Discord server.
Oh, right? Without a doubt, yeah. But you've got to have your access to different social media channels to point people to your Discord channel, because Discord in and of itself has virtually no discoverability.
Yes, that is correct. And I think that the question becomes then, how do you do that? And how do you move people over to that space? And also I'm hearing rumblings about Discord becoming a bit going through the shitification. That term is funny, but I hope they don't. I hope they don't. But I'm hearing
that. I think as long, I mean, the companies that tend to, I'm not going to say never do it, but are least likely to do it, are the ones that are public. Not the ones that are private. It's yep. when they go public and all of a sudden they are beholden to shareholders. That's when shit starts going sideways. And, you know, this is one of the things that frustrates me to no end with a lot of these big, you know, companies. And that's why we're seeing so many tech layoffs. It's like, I've got a family member who was, I think, director level over at Amazon. And he left recently. And part of the reason was he said, you know, during the pandemic, everything was like grow, 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 grow. And they hired thousands of people, some of which didn't even have a desk. They were literally walking around the office all day with nothing to do, but they got hired. And now everybody's, you know, getting let go from those companies. But it's one of those things that time and time again, for the last 25 years, it seems to be the minute you go public and you're beholden to a bunch of shareholders, all of a sudden it's got to change. And it rarely, from the consumer side, it rarely changes for the better.
Can we name a single company? Let's focus on the video game world. Is there a single video game company that is stock listed that is doing a good job for their consumers? Could we say GTA maybe?
I would seriously put Microsoft in there Microsoft. Simply for Game Pass. I do think Game Pass is one of the coolest, best things in the industry. Agreed. But you know, at the same time, then they have a monopoly over PC operating systems and everything too. So
right now they're really good to their customers. And Phil Spencer has done an amazing job with his team the past 5-6 years of turning around the negative, you know, image of Xbox. And for me right now, I actually have, if you look at behind me, it's just PlayStation. I'm not sure if you see everything. It's basically just PlayStation games and PlayStation stuff from the past 20, 30 years. And with Xbox Series X and Game Pass, I actually bought two Xboxes that are side by side with two TVs that are side by side because I have, you know, I have an 8-year-old and a 6-year-old. And I was like, I'm not going to buy games all day. You know, I'm just going to, like, you know, buy Game Pass and they'll just like, but they're spending actually most of their time in Roblox and Fortnite, unfortunately, but you know what I mean? So I feel like they've solved a lot of these problems for families and long-term, to your point, if they become dominant or if they start dominating or if it becomes a monopoly, then that, you know, is probably when things are going to go south.
But that's also and we're like, Dan's clicking furiously to change the screens back and forth because we're having such a wonderful discussion here. That is also a product of another cycle that we have seen on and on and on again for the last 30 years. And it's whoever wins the previous console generation is a pain in the fucking ass to deal with in the next one. And we've seen Sega do it. We've seen Microsoft do it. We've seen PlayStation do it. I think it's become so embedded in PlayStation, they're going to do it no matter what. But, you know, they obviously killed it on the PS4. And now on the PS5, they are once again paying the ass to deal with. Microsoft is coming from behind, has to create these programs to really endear people to the platform because the Xbox is still not selling at nearly the rate that the PlayStation is. But we see this, if I would bet you any amount of money, in a world, if we jump over to that alternate universe right now where the PS5 is like faltering and, you know, the Xbox S and X are doing fantastic, Microsoft would be the one pain in the ass to deal with. You know, it's just one of those things that it happens on and on and on again. But back to the original question. No, I don't know anybody. I'm trying to think of, and I'm even trying to think of publicly traded companies that aren't in the U.S. But, you know, ever since the Embracer fallout, you know, that has, you know, pretty much tubed a whole lot of stuff. It's like we're seeing, you know, Paradox is publicly traded. They're letting go teams left and right now. But I don't know if somebody out there has a suggestion for a publicly traded company anywhere in the world in games that is creating wonderful consumer value right now and has not become shitified. I'm taking that word. You know, that
was... I feel like there needs to be a better word. I know how he came up with it.
But it's one of those words that you immediately know what it means.
Now it's... you do, obviously. Absolutely.
So Lee had a question, and I'm with him. I seem to remember something about this, but I also see this in so many contracts. Did Valve update their Steam agreement to prevent Epic Game Store exclusive by requiring a parallel release on Steam and Epic? So if you launch on Epic first, you can't launch on Steam.
Okay, first of all, can we confirm that somehow? Can we just get a link or something like that? So
I'll work on that.
And is this recent, by the way, that they this change?
This
recent?
Is why it's like there's some. This is triggering something in my head too, because I remember something to this effect.
Can you do that legally? Well, I guess you can in a sense.
What legally?
But I guess, well, the good thing, thank God, we have Europe and the EU for some things. Like, you know, GDPR is one thing. You know, like. Oh, I remember the old days when we used to work on free-to-play. We could track, like, as soon as you see an ad on Facebook and we have your email, we could track your entire journey from that point of how many times you've seen our ad, how many times you've clicked on it, how many times, like, did you sign up or not? Once you actually sign up, like, connecting our platform, like, it was, and it was a very interesting time. And now, obviously, all that is gone. And now, like in looking at you know the app store or Apple and Google's platforms with regards to adding with regards to ads, it's a mess. And now we're also seeing a lot of mobile developers hiring traditional you know game makers to come on board and help them you know either port games to consoles and PC or start making new games for that platform. What I'm trying to get to is, and I kind of lost my track here, but what I'm trying to get to is like, you know, if we go back to Steam, how can they stop you from putting your game first on another platform? And why would they be able to do that? So does that also apply on console? Like if you put your game first on console, because that's been happening for a long time that people probably launch their games on console first and then move them over to PC or the other way around, right? It's going to put a lot of people in a very weird situation. And I'm not sure, from a Steam perspective, is that going to serve them well? Like, will developers take that as a positive thing for them? I don't think so.
I don't think they will either. And it's never about if they, you know, they can't ever prevent you from launching somewhere else. All they can do is prevent you from launching on their platform after you did launch somewhere else. And I don't see how that would be beneficial to them either. And you can't tell me if somebody takes, you know, third party comes in, gigantic, but let's just say Grand Theft Auto 6. And they decide to launch on Epic first to get 100% of their money, which I think they should totally do. You think 6 months later, Steam's going to go be like, no, we can't. We're not going to put GTA 6 on Steam.
Well, that's GTA 6. That's the problem. Like that's a separate deal. That deal or that game will just like, you know, it will just disregard any current agreement. That doesn't, you know, but for the average indie developer, if you can't do that deal with Epic to launch your game for full 6 months and not pay a single dime, okay, and they're blocking you from doing that because ultimately, unfortunately, in the current state of things, most users are on Steam, and that's kind of like where you're probably going to make most of your money in the current state. But if you as a developer want to experiment and try things out at least, or at least like, you know, make more money during the 6 months before you go over to Steam, if they're blocking you, I'm not sure how that is okay.
So, devil's advocate.
Yep.
If you're an indie team and you launch on Epic and you have 6 months of, you know, sales, you get 100% of the profits. at the end of that 6 months, one or two things is going to happen. Either the game is not selling well enough to justify its continued existence and support, in which case it doesn't matter if you put it on Steam or not. It's going to get lost in the haze, or it's doing so well that Steam would be like, okay, why wouldn't we do this? Or just leave it on there alone. So I think if you look at it from a pragmatic standpoint for some of these developers and some of these games that are out there, Epic, you don't have to pay them anything for 6 months. You have a smaller group to you're going against. I mean, discoverability is an issue everywhere. It's less of an issue on Epic because there are less games on Epic. And you can tap into, you know, people. It's not like there's a shortage of people in the Epic Game Store. I mean, literally everyone who has Fortnite has it. I mean, so it's one of those things that, especially with the developers who have been, you know, ranting for years about is Steam justifying its 30%, why wouldn't you do it? I mean, I honestly don't see a downside. It's not like Steam is bending over backwards right now to give a big buoy to the indie teams of the world, unless they've already got a big publisher behind them and, you know, they know it's going to be a success.
It is an interesting situation. I guess to wrap it up in a sense, I hope it's not the case that, you know, they will block you because I don't think it serves them in the long term. But I think what I'm happy about at least is that Epic is doing everything they can to kind of like, you know, level a playing field or offer a better alternative to developers. By the way, speaking of like storefronts, what happened to the Discord storefront? Why did they shut that down?
I don't think anybody's buying anything from it.
But I just feel like that could have been such an interesting.
Now, there has been, and I don't know, this is shit's like brand new, and I don't know how it's going to factor in, and Pebs may know better than I, but I've gotten two updates on Discord this week for our Discord where now we can sell digital assets to people. And I'll skip over all the evil thoughts I've had in my brain about that. And then there was another one. What was the other update? I mean, but that was the big one, was the fact that there's a server shop now. And then there was some other update. Pebs, if you're listening and you can remind me what that was, that would be fantastic. But I'm wondering if you can sell games now through this digital. You may not be able to. But anyway, I think the big part of it is like, yes, the media update. So we can share videos and stuff on there now.
And that is that a subscription, by the way? Is that a subscription you're selling, or what do we mean by digital asset?
Well, I mean, so we have this thing called a server shop on our server now as an option. And, you know, we've already talked about it, and it's like there's very little. I mean, our whole thing is getting access to indie devs with this knowledge for free. So if we started charging for shit, it would be.
That's amazing.
We're publicly owned now, so we're going to start charging for everything. And you have entered the world of indie game business becoming enshittified. I'm kidding.
Well, I hope they allow that. And speaking of that, by the way, there's another company that is doing something interesting when it comes to allowing you as an indie developer to kind of like make all the money. It's a small company called Exola. I'm not sure
if you've heard about it. We love Exola. They've sponsored us for, you know, many a season.
I love them as well, and I love the people that are there. They're amazing people. They're really nice people. And I know they're working on something I can't talk about. I'm not sure if it's public or not yet, but they are working on something on the side. But their platform is also great to allow kind of like developers to kind of like, you know, have their own
launcher. Yeah, there's a lot of tools that they have that don't get as much play as I think they should. On the server store, and go ahead and tell me if your brain goes exactly where mine is when I give you the examples of things that we can sell. We can sell role access, game tutorials, wallpapers, PFP art. I will confess I have no idea what that is. Filter presets. You can sell songs. It says song drops. And the last two, you can sell cosplay pics and 3D models. So we may be entering the OnlyFans transition to Discord. And if y'all are interested, Dan has his own OnlyFans channel called the lovely Ogre, and you can sign up for that. There's stuff that they're doing. I'm wondering if you
do they manage like all the payment services and everything?
I don't know, Casey. Don't ask me hard questions. I'm just here to like find stuff.
And here's what's interesting. So is Discord becoming like the World Wide Web in a sense? I mean, you know what I mean? It's such a weird thing.
I will say this. They have added a lot of stuff lately. And here, for those of you who are interested, here's the link to what you can do with the store stuff on there. But I'm very glad that they turned down their bid to get bought several years ago, because that was good. All right. We do have some questions, and I am so totally impressed. We are like 41 minutes into this podcast, and we have not hit a single question that we had laid aside for all of this, which has got to be a new record.
Indie Game Business has one of the longest running digital event series in the gaming industry, with hundreds of publishers, investors, developers, and tech companies to meet with. All the sessions are always free to watch forever, and you can get a free pass to receive all the slide decks from all those speakers. The tickets for meetings start just at $50. Go to indiegame.business and use the code IGBPODCAST to get 20% off your ticket.
All right, so from Discord, if you suggest making a Discord first to build community for indies, what is the one social platform you would pair with it? This is what we were talking about very early.
I have no idea. Yeah. I'll be honest and say I have no idea. Like, I left the community in March.
I would say TikTok. Right now, grow on TikTok, and then point people at Discord. Now
I've heard the kids. Sorry, Jay. I heard the kids these days, they don't go on Google to search. They go on TikTok and Snapchat and these places to search.
I didn't even know you could search on Snapchat. So
yeah. So I haven't. I've never used Snapchat or TikTok before today, and I don't know why. Because I'm you know, following the news, and I'm trying to. There is this function. Have you seen that function on Snapchat where you can, like, you know, zoom in on the globe, and you can actually.
I have. Honestly, never downloaded and or opened Snapchat. I have no idea what's in it.
Listen, I don't know what you're doing today or tonight. Just download Snapchat. You don't have to register or anything. Just, like, you know, put up a fake account or whatever, and just, like, you know, check out their features. But I found this thing where I'm not sure. I think it's Snapchat. It's either one of them, but I think it's Snapchat. You can see the globe and the map, and then you can, like, zoom in on different cities or whatever, and then you can see hotspots, and you can just click on one of those hotspots, and you'll get, like, direct live video feeds or recorded video feeds from that specific area. So instead of going to Google Maps and searching for a restaurant, or, like, if you want a tip for a restaurant, you can just, like, you know, search restaurant on TikTok or on Snapchat, and it will show you people actually in the location, and you can actually see, like, instead of going to these old dated, and that's what the kids are doing these days. That's what I'm hearing. I'm not sure. Somebody has to confirm. So instead of going to these dated websites like Google Maps, people are now going to Snapchat or TikTok and searching for, let's say, a restaurant in this area or whatever. And then they're getting an experience from an actual human being standing there live or recorded, who've been there and can show you what it looks like. And you don't have to, like, you know, waste time looking on. When I used to like go to restaurants or places back in the day, I used to, like, go on YouTube and, like, you know, search for a review, like somebody who's been to the area or the country or the city or whatever. But it seems like that's changed, and kids' behaviors these days is drastically different from how we do things.
Yeah, thank God social media didn't exist when I was in college. There's just, like, no way that would have gone well. I'll actually try it because I have never. I mean, the first time I downloaded TikTok and it's like I turned it on and it started yelling at me. I was like, "Oh fuck this!" All right,
yeah.
But I do know that there's an option in there to turn it off, so you can now open TikTok and it doesn't yell at you all the time. That is interesting.
But I would agree. So to the question, I'll say yes. TikTok, I agree. Because I have a developer. His name is Leonard Sumero. You can Google him, Leonard Sumero Productions. He does these amazing small Atari-esque, Nintendo-esque like games from the 80s, 90s. And he started a TikTok account, and he's just posting random stuff about him or his games. And he's getting like, 300, 400 views. And that's just like, for the first or second week he's been on there. And I think the magic of like, being able to flick through content so fast, it gives you and your brand an opportunity to be viewed, unlike, let's say, Twitter or these other places.
I'll check it.
Check it out.
We've got a TikTok page. Pep runs it, and I'm like, okay, look, we have stuff. All right, so next question, and this is actually a good one. So, well, not the other ones weren't good, but I meant this was a good one as well. Leave me alone, people. It's been a long week. What is the best way to attract a publisher to a deal with marketing and promotion, or is that not a direction indie should go?
So is the question, I want to market and
can I want you to help promote your chances with a publisher by doing your own marketing and promotion? And if so, what's the best way to do it?
So I was at Gamescom this year. And I saw a game that got a $7 million deal. It's a imagine, good lord, what's that game called? Octopath Traveler. I look behind me because the games are behind me and I can still read the games.
So, and you immediately scanned the entire catalog and came up with the answer. Well, got it. Yes.
The thing is, Octopath Traveler specifically is like a collector's edition here, so the box is bigger.
Got it. Yes.
But anyways. It's an Octopath Traveler-esque game. It's made by two people to start with. I think there are 20, 30 people by this time because they got that $7 million deal. But they started, I think, 5 years ago. And how they got the deal is they were just posting GIFs of their game or like their characters or whatever. And one of the publishers saw it. And that's how it led to a deal. So... absolutely. And I think specifically and especially today, in today's climate, you need to do everything. You need to have plan A, B, C in terms of if I'm not getting this deal, how am I going to launch my game on my own? And I think if you just start from that perspective instead, that the mindset you should start with, in my opinion, is I'm going to launch the game on my own. Nobody's going to help me. And then obviously, if somebody does come and help you, that's a great thing. But it's going to be hard today to get
a deal. That is absolutely the mentality that you have to go in. I will say, all right, so to add to this, yes, doing promotions and running social media, but our good friends at Vicarious PR actually have a service that they do specifically for indie devs that are trying to get publishers, and they do marketing and promotion, and it is affordable, and Michael and his team are really, really good folks. We love them to death. But they actually have a special package that they do for indie devs. So you can go and, which helps because then, look at how many games that we see. We do scouting for publishers and investors, and we see a shit ton of games. And that's the same way every other publisher is that's out there. But when that game hits your desk, and then you're like, oh, wait a second, I just saw an article about this, or I just saw a YouTuber, it immediately gets more value. So you should 100% be doing, the stuff that is free, where you're basically spending it's a time cost to it. But there are options out there to go ahead and say, okay, look, I want to actually invest some money in this to increase our chances of getting a publisher. And yeah, Vicarious does that. So Michael's on the server, ping them. He has stuff for you.
There's also some free tools that people can use, and I'm sure everybody at this point knows Rami Ismail's press kit. That's like one of the most used.
Yeah, my concern is that that particular kit, has he updated it over the years?
I'm not sure. I know that he.
My concern is that that kit is getting a little long in the tooth.
Yeah. Yes, and especially when people are using the same type of, like, you know, formats, yes. It gets, you know, tiresome. But I think you brought up a really good point, which is you have to be in front of publishers before you actually meet them. Like, you know, they should be the ones who are calling you and not the other way around. And to do that and to get to that point, you have to have shown your game to the public. You know, gone are the days of, oh, I'm going to work on my game for, like, in secret for 2, 3, 4 years. And then I'm going to, like, you know. You know what's funny about that? I was talking to a friend of mine, and he was mentioning these old-ass developers. Like, their former, I'm not going to say who, former big publisher people, like top 3, 4 publishers, who left their jobs and started a company, and they're like, nobody's talking about our game. Why? Like we were working on this for a couple of years and nobody's talking about it. Like, what the hell are you doing? Like, the world has changed. That's not how you, like, it's not like you're going to announce your game and then everybody's going to, like, you know, go bananas. There's only very few people who can do that today, from software as an example. But you have to be out there. And I think, I feel like early access is a must at this point. Like, every single game, I don't want to say every single game because now that thing is going to get destroyed in the future. But I feel like you should be in early access. Or rather this, you should be live as soon as possible. It doesn't matter what the state of the game is. Is it playable?
I wouldn't agree with that. Because if you are going to have a chance to get a publisher, the minute you start charging for early access, you immediately have just killed off at least 50% of your publishing opportunities.
So I guess it's a case, obviously, it's a case-by-case basis. But I feel like early access, what is good about early access, it gives you a free pass. Well, it does two things, really. It gives you a free pass in a sense. And also, three things now. It gives you that free pass of, you know, you could potentially, you know, make the game better and get more traction over time. It gives you some revenue up front, potentially. Okay.
Maybe.
And the third thing, maybe, obviously. And the last thing for me is, like, you know, fail fast, fail forward. Like, take, if this game doesn't get traction, nobody cares. If it's, you know, if it's shit, like, you know, cut your losses, get your learnings, do the next one, and like, you know, iterate fast. Or maybe if we just want to go back and say this to all developers. You can't be stuck doing the same game for a couple of years. Like, you have to get validation quickly to understand, okay, does this game matter? Will it have legs? Does it matter? And if it does, continue pouring in resources and time into it. Otherwise, just move on to the next thing. Get your learnings, apply that to the next game, and try again.
If you do it with really small games, I mean, the concern is you have the same discoverability issues on early access as you have anywhere else. Yeah. So if you launch your game and you start selling it for $15 or whatever it is, if you don't have the marketability side in your pocket to promote your early access launch, you're not going to see any sales. You're not going to get any feedback. And you've just jeopardized a lot of publisher possibilities. Now, the reality of that is, if there's nothing going on there to get eyeballs in the first place, you're probably not going to get a publisher either. Mm-hmm. But
exactly,
you have hamstrung yourself. And if you do, and you have this gigantic, out of the gate, huge early access success, then you'll need a publisher anyway. And so you're perfectly fine. So it's a very big gamble. It is the reality of the risk reward scenario from a video game in the business of video games, because either you've got what you take to be successful. And we see this in green light meetings that we're in, you know, we'll show a publisher a game and it's got early access and they're like, well, it's only got like 15 reviews. It's like, well, no shit. They're a developer. They don't know they need marketing help. That's why they need you. And so it's very, very risky. That's what I would say. It's one thing to have a wish list page or even a demo page, you're fine. But the minute you start selling in early access, you have pretty much cast the dice.
Okay, then I'll give you a thing that I think would probably apply with my theory and how I would look at it. And it's mainly for live service games. If you look at the past 5 years, the only live service games that have been successful, maybe there's outliers here and there, but most of the live service games that have been successful the past 5 years are the games that start extremely slow with small teams. They are out early, played by players, and then they are iterating over time. And then, 5 years later, boom, now it's a top-tier game that everybody's playing and everybody knows about. That one I can, confirm is true and tested by, doing the research myself. But it is a gamble all around. Like, it doesn't matter if you're going to, show your game now or later. If it's a shitty game, it's a shitty game. If it's a good game, it's a good game, I guess.
All right, we're running out of time, and I am very proud to say I don't think we've hit a single question we had outlined for this thing, and this may be the first time in the podcast history that we didn't even hit a single question. From the community here, how do you revitalize an old game?
That's a very hard question. And it's very open-ended. Like, what game are we talking about?
I'm wondering if this has to do anything with Atari's announcement yesterday that they're looking for an indie dev to redo Bubsy.
Does anybody care about Bubsy?
I don't think so. I really don't. Because I've seen this IP bounced around, like, for the last 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
And it has, not just from Atari, from other companies as well. And Atari owns the rights now. But they come to us and they're like, we want to redo Bubsy. And I'm like, why? Like, what part of that game, the originals, did I miss? But, if you're talking about revitalizing a modern-esque game, it needs to be done with marketing. And if it's talked about revitalizing an old one.
I'm trying to think of games that are worth, revitalizing or bringing back. Like, I remember Shenmue 3 was a game that had a cult following. I think it went on Kickstarter, if I'm not mistaken. It's owned by Sega, right?
Yeah.
And Sega wasn't backing it, like, with funding. Like, they did their own thing, I believe, on Kickstarter. And somebody has to correct me, please.
So, but what we need to do is punt this question over to my buddy Larry at Night Dive, because that's literally what they do over at Night Dive, is revitalizing all of these old games. Give us some more context on what you're looking for, might be able to help. But otherwise, I would literally say talk to Night Dive. So from the Discord, if early access brings in a ton of players, wouldn't that prove to a publisher that you're likely to be successful?
Absolutely.
But then why do you need the publisher?
Well, I think the publisher, so that's a question, or that's something that every time I talk to Rami Ismail, he comes back to me saying, well, you don't need publishers. I disagree, because I think publishers bring another set of values, or not values in that. They bring other value that you can't have access to. Obviously, physical distribution, worldwide distribution on digital spaces, countries that you might not have access to, let's say China as an example. So publishers do bring a lot of value. And then obviously, if they're publishing your game, then I hope that they're putting some marketing dollars behind it to get more eyeballs on it.
God, you would be shocked. Don't get me started on the publishers that don't do that. Here's what I would say, though. I mean, you are correct. And I, too, feel that we're at a point right now where you do need a publisher. Unless you have launched into early access and had tremendous support. But even then, this is what I would do. I would hold on to the Steam rights. No, publisher, you're not getting those, because we are the ones that have already invested this money. We have the following. We have earned this money. But you can absolutely work with a publisher to go to, like you said, other platforms. I mean, having relationships with mm-hmm. Epic and GOG and all these other sites, it does take time. But have that publisher handle other platforms and have them handle ports. And, you know, if you're going to go to mobile or you're going to console or whatever else. But the reality is you need a publisher so you can be successful on Steam. But if you launch an early access and you have solid success, you don't need a publisher for Steam. You need a publisher for other stuff.
Agreed. So here's an example, and I'm not sure if I'm able. Let me just double check. I think I am able to say this. A good example is my friends at Pugstorm, who've made the game called Core Keeper. And I think it's sold a couple million copies at this point. But they recently signed a deal, a publishing deal. Let me just
double check. They signed one a couple years ago.
No, this was recent. I think like in the past 6 months, I believe. Yes, it is on the website. So Fireshine Games is helping them with publishing.
Yeah, but they've been helping them for a while.
Oh, really? Did I miss that? Am I just too old?
Well, it could be that my old person time lapse mentality, but I think they've been signed with them for about a year because I believe we had one of the Fireshine guys on here.
But this is post being live, right? This is post being like early access.
I don't think so.
I have a feeling it is, but
I don't know.
Somebody confirm it,
please. I know that they've been working with Fireshine for a while. I don't know how long they've been live on Steam though.
Yeah. But I think that just to give it like an example to the question, then, like, you know, if that is the case, and I hope it is, if that's the case that they signed them up after being live, and I think that's a good example of like,
well,
okay,
I
so
think
these people.
Actually, the reason this is ringing a bell is because I think Joshua, who we've had on here several times, was the one that actually signed them at Fireshine. And so if we wanted to cheat, you know, I could ping him and find out. But I mean, but you see this happen though.
Yep.
I mean, everybody, you know, loves talking about the Stardew Valley success, but you know, Stardew turned around and signed a publisher for quite a while to handle all the stuff outside of what they were already doing. And so it's not uncommon at all.
I think to that point, like there's two things that are going to happen with a publisher. Like just to point it out, obviously one is what you mentioned, the porting, right? And the other one is actually being physically in stores. And that's, I know that most sales today are obviously, you know, digital, but it does help a bit to be in the physical space as well.
All right. I found our proof.
Yes. Tell me.
So I cheated and just went straight to Joshua's LinkedIn. He left Sold Out, which is now Fireshine, in March of 2021. And in the time that he was there, they signed Core Keeper.
And I believe Core Keeper has been in early access for a year and a half now.
So, yeah, they probably signed it before. I don't know. Anyway, but it happens. I mean, this is not, you know, you can be successful and still get, I mean, you can have a successful indie title and still get a publisher. Because, like you said, there's a lot of stuff in there that you just can't factor in that they're going to do and they're going to help with.
And I think you made a good point. Like, you should, if you can. Now, obviously, different publishers are different, and you need to really be careful about who you're talking to and
yes.
what type of deal it is. And I would advise getting a lawyer really to manage that conversation. And I'll throw in lawyer.se. I'm not sure if you know those people. It's a Swedish law firm. They have really cool, like if you go to their website, lawyer.se, it's a really funny website, like how they, because the CEO is like a former filmmaker. So it's a really funny video they have, but they can help with negotiations. I've talked to them recently, and I'm trying to like, you know, sign them up, or I've already kind of like signed them up as a partner for our network. But what is cool about them is like, you know, when it's time to negotiate, put those people in place and they will negotiate for you and they'll help you to get the best deal.
That's where having that good, I mean, you need to have an attorney one way or another, but also getting, you know, consultants or agents or all that sort of stuff. It's not only about having that negotiation, but it's also about doing a deeper background check on your publisher. Because there are some out there, and I'll have a team come to me and they're like, hey, we're so excited, we just signed with someone. So, and I'm just like, oh my God, no, don't. But I can't tell them that.
Yep.
Because the deal's already been done, and you know, but it's just like, And generally, I'm really good about not saying especially on the Discord, somebody will say, so what did you think about this publisher? And I'm like, I'm not stupid enough to put that in writing. I was like, but here are some people that you should go talk to and point them in the right direction, because you have to be absolutely, absolutely careful.
Speaking of publishers, we're probably going to see a couple of them fold, if not a lot of them.
We've already seen a shit ton of them fold. Our publisher list went from, I swear, 4 years ago, it was like close to 800 publishers. But now it's down to 550. But it goes up and down. But you can easily see a plus minus 75 companies every single year.
And the problem for indies in that context is if you sign with a publisher and the publisher goes under, you're, in some cases, you're almost all, you know, fucked.
In some cases, you actually work out really well, though.
In some cases,
because you get those rights back if your contract was done correctly. And if a publisher has already gone and done a good bit of marketing, got you some visibility, and then those rights fall back in your lap.
Yep.
In other cases, you get shit.
In other cases, you're either in a position where you have this, you know, game that you've been working on for a couple of years, and now we're in tough times, obviously, and it's super hard to open conversations. That's one thing. And the other one is, somebody comes in and buys the old publisher, and now you have this new partner that, you know,
doesn't want your game.
Yep. Well, that's what happened to one of my clients.
Oh, I've had it happen many, many times. Yeah. And it doesn't even always have to be a new company coming and hire them. I've had new CEOs come in at an existing publisher that was already a deal for and then kill it. I mean, we see about a game a week coming in to our system via the Embracer lockdown fallout. I mean, it's absolutely, and that's what makes it so much harder for indies right now. It's like, not only are you going out there and competing for less dollars with less companies, but you're also competing against games that were funded by AAA studios for years, and now they've been cut loose into the wild and they've got to find deals as well. So, I mean, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but it is not pretty out there right now. And that's why indies need to be taking as many steps towards self-preservation and self-reliance as they humanly can.
And there are so many cool topics I want to talk about, and I'm not sure how much time we have, because
not a lot, because I have to go pick up my son.
There needs to be a part two.
We can do that, and we can take it to the Discord as well. But we got one more question I want to get to. Let's from Lee. Are there any publisher or alternative funding recommendations for a new IP indie multiplayer shooter with $1 million budget? And he says, yes, we have a playable.
Okay, so on the publisher front, I'm assuming you already have a huge list of all the publishers, and you probably sent them. Either you are, or you're in contact with them, or you're looking to. And if you need help, I would love to help. Obviously, that's kind of like what I do right now. And I'm sure, like, you know, Jay and his team is, you know, available as well. But I think an avenue right now for people to get their games out there is also to look elsewhere, which is investors, either angel investors or other types of, you know.
You could not have segued better. Go ahead. Yes.
Okay. So anyways, but I think there's an opportunity there, and there are still people doing, you know, bets and looking at projects to fund. And if your game is really cool, I mean, another partner that I'm working with and the people that I love, former EA people, they started a Swedish fund called Behold. Check them out. Really nice people, superhuman people. It's the same people behind Raw Fury, but now they have Sweden's biggest fund for games. So that's an avenue you can look at. I'm going to put this out there. I'm not sure if people are going to take this in a positive or not. But I think you have to look to the East as well today. So China is doing an amazing job, I think, supporting a lot of developers today, in my opinion, better than what we were doing in the West, especially how they treat people. I was extremely surprised. I've had some really good conversations with Chinese publishers and investors, and that's an avenue. Korea is also going into the mix there. And obviously Saudi Arabia is going into the mix. Now Saudi Arabia is a bit today, there's things happening where, which, you know, especially with the Embracer thing as well. So, but moving forward, I think that's going to be another avenue for investment and looking at their public fund. So I think we need to look a bit more to the East. And also, if we look in the West specifically, then, you know, investors, private investors, or like, you know, what are they called when they put a bunch of investors together as like a team? I forgot what that's called.
I mean, is that not a VC?
A VC, yes.
Oh, okay. They're like, all right. Sorry.
Smaller ones. They're like, you know, smaller VCs, like, you know, more like
angels are the smaller versions.
There you go. People who are like, you know, more maybe human, and if you want like a more human connection for indies. So that's another avenue to look at. And there's a couple of them, like as an example in Sweden, we have East Sweden Game, which is led by Thomas Ahlström. He's doing an incubator with the city of Linköping. But what I'm trying to get to is he has his own like small clique of investors and they get together and invest in different, you know, companies.
That is the typical one investor leads you to another one.
Absolutely.
And like I said, perfect segue. And Andy, you can pop in here too. For the last couple of weeks, we've been saying that the, you know, first version of our investor list is going to be ready soon. And I can proudly say that it is literally open on my desktop right now. And barring one little bug in our deployment process on the website that I have yet to track down, it is going to be live imminently. And yes, Behold is on there, but we have put together, researched, kudos to my team for doing this over the last several months, 800 or so investors in the industry. And we went a little broad this first term. So there's some tech companies in there that maybe haven't done games before, but are certainly adjacent to this. And there's some app like investors, early stage things as well. But give us a couple of hours. That's my next job after we finish this podcast and I pick up my son, is to figure out how this is going to be done. And then we'll announce it on the Discord. We'll be doing social media stuff. It'll be, all you got to do is go to the website, download it. It's coming in the same package as our publisher list. Now, instead of one, you know, 12 page document, this is a 45 page document full of 1400 investors, publishers, links to their websites. It's all good. It's all good.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah. And you can get that at indiegame.business
soon.
Soon. But
you might be able to get it right now. We just had some issues on it. You could try it, but don't be confirmed until I tell you it's confirmed. But yeah.
Right. All the other links also for all things Indie Game Business, it's scrolling across the screen right now. It's linktree.com/IndieGameBusiness. You can check that out. Also our Discord, if you're not on Discord, discord.gg/IndieGameBusiness. And we've got merch. Don't you want that Indie Game Business shirt or hoodie or cup? I know you do. I've got an old school one right here. Well, you can't see because of the green screen. It's got the old school
Powell Group logo.
Collector Powell Group logo on it, right?
We don't have. Well, there are new bottles on the website.
That's a super corporate bottle,
right?
Well, I mean, well, our on the other side is the Indie Game
Business logo, you know, but it's a green screen. Streamlabs.com/IndieGameBusiness/merch. Thank you so much for coming on here, Casey. This was like a great back and forth debate/discussion. It was awesome.
And we didn't touch a single question we had laid out. Have we ever done that, Dan? Have we ever made it all the way through one and never actually hit a question?
Well, we have had ones where we didn't have questions from the beginning and we just kind of went through it, but having questions and not even touching them.
I don't think we've done that before. But yes, Casey, we will absolutely have you back, and maybe we'll
touch
on some of these questions that we had laid out. Because yeah, this is great, dude. Really appreciate it. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. You guys are doing an amazing job. I really appreciate it. I also appreciate what you're gonna do today. Was it? You're gonna release that list?
No pressure.
Maybe. Okay, no pressure. But I guess, like, you know, as a support system, I really appreciate that. So thank you.
I think honestly, if people go to the site now and you click that it's up at the top of the screen like it's always been, where it says, now it says free publisher and investor list. You should be able to download it, but I'm not going to say there's not going to be an issue one or two people will have trying to get it, because it gets emailed to you. So, yeah, give it a try. If not, give it a try next week.
If not, try it again later. And if not, at the very least, hang out in the Discord, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So thank you so much. Everyone, we've got a show every single Friday for the rest of the year.
Heather has us booked through January.
Yes.
That's the bad news, Casey. I can't get you back on here until January.
It's all good. It's all good, baby.
All right, everybody, have a wonderful weekend, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Indie Game Business. You can learn more about the show and our online business networking events at indiegame.business.